Hey everybody, and welcome back for another episode of The Overlay, a poker podcast brought to you by Paramount Social Club in Houston, Texas, and CCG Poker in beautiful Chicago.
I always like how Chicago's beautiful and Houston's just... led with Houston there.
I did leave with Houston because technically right now we only have one real sponsor, and that's going to kind of get us to our episode of the day, episode 34. What's happening, poker? What's happening in poker? Hey, poker, what's happening? Ooh, that's not
That's not a bad episode name.
Hey, poker, what's happening? I'm going to have to like re-listen to this so I remember the name of the episode.
Guys, just in case you're wondering, this is how we come up with our titles. We're speaking it out into existence, and we just did it right there, improvising live for you guys. We had no idea what to call it.
Nope.
You speak it 12 times, and then boom, you come
and
up with
it. And it just comes out.
That's
so we didn't want to do another live, like state of live poker during COVID, because this is kind of more, this transcends that idea of we want to do kind of like just there's so many things happening in poker right now, even though like literally 95, I don't know what the actual mathematical number is, but 90 something percent of the world is not playing poker, or at least live poker, that is. So we wanted to do an episode and talk about kind of everything that's going on in poker right now, not as it relates to COVID, but just how it's just in general, like a news update.
How it's, yeah.
Kind of like a 2020 wrap up. We'll probably not come up with any more ideas and need to do that next month. So we're not going to call it that. We're just going to call it, Hey Poker, What's Happening? By Brandon and Ken.
I like it.
Also, Paramount got shouted out first today because CCG's down. So
right. Paramount's open and running.
Paramount's open and running.
Taking in money. So
well, let's just start with that
first.
What are the only places right now as of Thanksgiving week, Thanksgiving weekend? Let's say Thanksgiving of 2020. There are only a handful of places that are currently playing poker. Brandon, what are they?
We got Florida.
Florida.
Because, you know.
It's Florida.
Florida's Florida. They've been, you know, rolling for, they were the first to open and they're still plugging on.
They're
through.
Cool.
They're cool. They're just like, Hard Rock, come and play. We're running. And then you got Vegas, which obviously is the mecca of poker.
Mecca of any gambling.
Of any gambling in the world. So they're up, they're running. They have some weird regulations, which we'll get into in a little bit, but they are rolling. They just had a really big MSPT tournament, which we'll also talk about a little bit later.
Nice spoiler
alert. And then finally we have Texas. And Texas is rolling, right? I mean,
so in the United States, there's only three places: the state of Texas, the state of Florida, and then Vegas. Are there any other Nevada casinos that are doing poker? Like, I don't know. Are there any other like California's
like
down?
Stuff.
I don't know.
California's
yeah.
down. I think Talking Stick in Arizona might be rolling.
Okay,
that might be another one. But that's like
but
a
that's
single,
like a one-off
isolated casino, right?
I'm saying that's just a one-off, right? This is like an, in general, like the industry in Vegas, poker still going. The industry of poker in Texas still going. The industry of poker in you see what I'm doing here in Florida still going.
Like even though we were running 2 weeks ago, like the industry, the poker industry in
is
Chicago
down.
Was down.
Yeah, the Midwest.
Even though we were running.
Midwest in general, because like, even when the casinos were open, which in Illinois they're no longer open, they weren't
wild.
Doing any kind of no poker whatsoever. Really, table games are down in general. Not like they cut out blackjack and roulette and craps completely, but you know, instead of their normal 20-something table pit of blackjack tables, they're down to maybe a half a dozen.
Right, 8, 6.
I mean, significantly less.
I mean, so, it's tough. You know, it goes along with everything. It's just people don't have
maybe
the
I'll start
and stuff. And, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
People have to gamble. I mean, this is an industry. Right. We can't just pick and choose which industries. I personally find that poker is a and gambling in general is an essential business. It's for mental health.
It is.
People need to gamble on sports and then they need to go and have a place to double up their money if they lose so that they can pay off those sports bets. I mean,
correct.
There's so
you
many
can't
good
lose
things.
Forever. Martingale it, and it's a winning strategy.
That's so good.
It is.
Can you tell us what Martingale is? When
you just keep doubling up until you hit it. You go red.
For me, it's really red. Yeah, it's the Burt syndrome. You just keep doubling the bet till you're even.
And in theory, if you have enough money or the table goes high enough,
it works.
Never, ever, ever lose.
It works. It's a scary, slippery slope, but it works.
It is. Yep.
Texas. I'm going to talk about Texas because I guess I'm the aforementioned expert in Texas, even though I have been there since the start of the pandemic. But the poker industry, for all my Texas fans out there, I think there's a few. It's insane. Like, it's crazy town. There are so many rooms open in Houston, Austin, San Antonio are like the big, big ones. Dallas is still kind of on the fence. They're just starting to get like one or two clubs opening up. It's still in the infancy of it. Houston poker's been going for probably 2 to 3 years, going on 3 years. Austin, same thing, more like 3 to 5 years, even though they had like only a handful of clubs. And again, all of those scenes have just exploded with the number of players. I think if we'd have seen a live WSOP event this year, I think the biggest turnout would have been from Texas in general. If they did some kind of like statistic of how many players come from each place, like, you know, or a state in general, I think, again, it's the largest state. Is it the largest state? I think it is.
Like, I think California is.
Population wise or like geographically? Both.
Geographically, it's Alaska, but.
Damn it. I wasn't even clear in the right continent.
Well, you are the right continent.
Right, I know. That was a funny hee hee.
I don't know. Population, it's got to be Texas.
Yeah, whatever. Anyways.
California, right?
Well, I think it kind of skews the numbers, but I think we would have seen a huge influx of players from Houston, and there would have been so many satellites down at in the Texas poker rooms, which would have been awesome. I think we would have seen a big increase in the number and get closer to those online days when there was just huge main event tournaments. Maybe not Jeannie Gold status, where the winner's going to take away, like, what did he win? Like $12 million? Which I think
but
is still
like
the largest.
$10 million is attainable now.
I mean, what was last year's?
Like 86-25 or something like that? It was in the eights.
Almost 86, 8,700 players? I think it would have definitely gotten close back to the 10,000.
First place. But.
Anyways, not only that, but being that live poker is still jamming in Texas, I mean, the rooms are all busy. They're doing these crazy guarantees. I'm not going to name drop any other places because I don't want to give out the free advertising since Paramount does pay for this particular podcast. But like, they've been having like 150K guarantees and blowing it out of the water, hitting the guarantee on day 1A when there's three flights to start a tournament. I mean,
which
that's when
so
you know
awesome.
That it's just, it's going to be an awesome tournament. And then it kind of, the guarantee does something where it's like a, you know, kind of two ways. One, it, you know, a lot of people will show up because they know it's guaranteed. So it's like, I don't have to worry about it. I can book all my flights or hotels or, you know, take time off work, whatever I need to do to get into that tournament because I know it's going to have a massive guarantee. And not that $150,000 is a massive guarantee, but when you're talking about like a $200 or $300 buy-in,
right,
that's a massive.
It's massive.
It's a massive payout. And then to hit that guarantee in the first flight when you have two more flights to go, I think the room that did it in Houston, they had a 150K guarantee. I think they got close to like 400K.
Which is so awesome.
Which is nuts.
And this is in the middle of a pandemic, too. Like, this is not even, this is where 33 to 50% of your player base is like, I don't even want
to. I'm not sure I want to do it, but it's like you probably get some guys that were on the fence are like, well, shit, for this massive prize pool, I think I will try to figure it out.
Right.
And it was, not that it was funny, but like, I saw some pictures, like, because Poker News, so if you really want to desperately know, like, what tournament we're talking about, you could check out Poker News, which is a great website to go to in general. Maybe they'll sponsor the podcast eventually. That would be kind of cool. But they do a really good job on live reporting. And, you know, it was funny. They were taking some pictures, and some people, like, one guy, he was pretty deep in the tournament, maybe, like, two or three tables left, and he's full-blown, like, pandemic ready to go. He's got on a gator. It's like one of them neck gators. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
He had a neck gator on. Then he had an N95 mask on over that. Then he had on ski goggles. And he was also wearing
a face shield?
No, that would have been, that's just way too much. He was just triple protected on his face, but he was also wearing purple gloves, which I think is just funny because like you have to actively go out and find gloves that are purple. You can't just go to Home Depot and get like painting gloves that are just white. Like, you got to actually go and get, like, purple gloves.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool, too. So, yeah, you know, and then it's funny, like, and then the guy next to him's, like, nose hanging out, like, just drinking a beer at the table, fingers in his mouth, eating a salad with his hand. I mean, that didn't happen.
Remember we did that, that's like, stereotype episode where it's, like, assign your players?
Yes.
I would, like, put the guy that's eating the salad with his fingers is, like, the loose, like, the loosey-goosey aggressive dude, and then the dude that's all, you know, N95 doff goggles.
Yeah.
I put him as like the nit. Like
episode,
oh man, like,
10. That's a good episode. That's actually one of our top five most popular episodes of all time. So shameless plug at number one. I think that's a great episode.
Yeah.
Episode 10, Poker Culture 101.
If you don't at least assign people to something, you're shooting in the dark. At
it's like
think something.
Right.
And then
go ahead.
Prove it later to be wrong.
Yeah, it's my favorite quote that I hate when people say it, and it's from Rounders, right? It's like, if you can't spot the sucker in the first 30 minutes of the table, then you are the sucker. But like, that's kind of true. Like, it's only aggravating and kind of a silly quote because it's very true.
Yep.
Like, you got to be able to put some people on some stuff and then know how they're going to play it and then use that to your advantage, which you can do if you listen to episode 10 of the Overlay, a Poker Podcast, brought to you by Paramount Social Club and CCG Poker.
We're going to try and get five of those in this episode.
Yeah, that's one.
Oof, that was one. All
that
right.
was one. So yeah, Texas is booming. And of course, the rumor mills, which again, we could do a whole episode on poker rumor mills, because I constantly joke that poker players are more gossip queens than like a sewing circle. And not that I have any idea what a sewing circle is, but like,
where'd you come up with that?
I don't know. My dad always says that. He's like, poker players are so gossipy, they're like a sewing circle, or worse than a sewing circle. But like, it's so true. Like, one little piece of thing comes out and like everybody talks about it. And like, it just goes through the entire industry, from dealers to pit bosses to floor personnel to players back to the dealers. And it's like this really weird game of telephone that just constantly
goes. Right, Chinese telephone.
It's so bad, but so much fun. It's great. Anyways,
so
Texas
is
wild. Oh, yeah. The rumor mill is in Texas that the same place that did the 150K guarantee, and they ended up doing like a whole series that had like a 300K guarantee, but it was like broken up into several different tournaments. Like the entire series had like a 300K guarantee on it. Because they did like a 150K guarantee, they did a 75K guarantee, a bunch
right,
of
10s, like 300K guarantee
in total purses, right? So it was over like 10 days or whatever it is. But now I guess the new word on the street is they're going to get one club is going to bump up to $500,000, and then a rival club. They're kind of like the two biggest right now, if not the two biggest, for like the high stakes game. I shouldn't say the biggest. They're the more high stakes games. You know, they're playing 5-5, 10-20 PLO, things of that nature, where they're the big games are. You know, they're constantly doing $300-$500 tournaments. You know, Paramount niches out kind of like what CCG does, you know, in that mid to low stakes stuff. You know, it's a lot of 1-3 games. The big game of the night is going to be a 2-5 no limit game or round by round. You get a lot of 20, 40, 80, $100 buy-in tournaments. Once a month, there might be something that's a little bit larger, but I mean, it's a 10K guarantee, but it's a much lower buy-in. So relatively speaking, still quite cool. Anyways, the word on the street is, the Houston street, is that one club just announced that they're doing like a $500,000 guarantee. Now, I don't know if that's for the series that they're going to do again, or if it's just one tournament that's a $500,000 guarantee. The next day, the other club snap calls and they're like, we're going to do $1 million guarantee.
$1 million? Yeah, that's awesome.
Which is bananas. Like, it's so crazy to think about it, but it is what it is. I'm not too terribly confident of what's going on in Florida, but Brandon, you're going to tell us about Vegas.
All right. I was about to say, I don't have anything on Florida. I just know that they're plugging along.
They're still playing.
I don't know. They're still playing. There's the Hard Rock, Seminole Hard Rock.
But I mean, none of the poker tours are down there. I mean, right? HBT is still down.
If anything, it'd be like the Hard Rock Poker Open, but I don't know if they're having
a they're ready to do it
right
yet.
Now.
I mean, in all honesty, and I hate to say this because it's you know, it's kind of true and bad in the same case. You know, it's like doing the 25 person events in Chicago, and you've got four full cash games going, you're at a severe limited seating and you've got 15 people on the list. It's like, no, you really can't do anything else. Like anything else.
What else can we do?
No, it's just, there's too many people that want to play 1-3. It's like, you're just going to have to run all of the tables on that. So maybe Florida, again, I'm just spitballing and trying to figure this stuff out. Maybe they don't even want to do a tournament because if they're at somewhat of a limited capacity and they're at capacity with cash games, it's like, really, the whole point of doing a large buy-in tournament or a large guaranteed tournament is to get players to come in and play at other stuff in the casino, either the table games, slot machines, in the poker room itself, because, I mean, that's where they're going to make more money, and that's ultimately what they want, is for people to play cash games where it's a far easier, less personnel, and certainly not something they have to deal with on it, you know, the whole time.
Right. Like when the horseshoe runs the big main event, or the, not the main event, but like of that one, that's $400 with a million, with a million day ones. Like they just want that whole crowd to like bust and go play the go cash downstairs. Games and other stuff, yep. to go downstairs. Because, I mean, they're making what, $35 a head on those things, which, right. yeah, I mean, if they have 1,000 players, it's $35,000.
For sure. Nobody's discounting
they
that.
Have the whole, they have the whole venue. They have a million dealers that they have to hire. They have the WSOP that obviously gets their cut. Mm-hmm. They have nine people tournament directing up there. I mean, they have food vendors. It's just like,
well, and then on the flip side too, like that venue could have been rented to freaking Billy Ray Cyrus or whoever. I don't know why I came up with Billy Ray Cyrus.
I feel like he was there last year.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Stain could have come and played, and they sell out, and it's a venue, and they're making $150 a ticket, and they fill the entire place, and it's on a, you know, evening basis. It's, you know, when the WSOP is at the Horseshoe in Hammond, which we're not quite sure if it's ever going to be back there, so rest in peace, WSOP Hammond, you know, that's all day long, all night, several different shifts. You know, when they have a band come in and play.
Right. Show up at 4. You set up at noon, and they're gone by midnight.
It's an eight-hour gig.
That's it.
Right. They play for 3 hours, just clean up, go home. Done.
Anyways. And those players still go down and play afterwards.
Every single of those people who paid $150 for the crappy tickets, you can pay much more for better seats if there are better seats. Maybe they don't have a ton of those. But, I mean, there's still skyboxes and corporate. There's so much more money in those events, in the event side, and then they really just want to get those guys and gals to go downstairs, drink, eat, gamble, come back, enjoy the place, be like, man, next time I want to go out, I'm going to go back there because I had so much fun. Anyways, correct. That is the business of casino properties,
right. Just in case
brought
you
to you
open
by
a casino,
Ken and Brandon.
You can hire us as consultants.
Episode 35, gambling consultants. I've lost enough where I could consult you on how to lose your money.
So anyways, Vegas. Let's go to Vegas.
Yep.
So Vegas had a really big MSPT.
Yep. What was the buy-in? What was the guarantee?
I should have looked up the guarantee. I think it was a $1,600 buy-in.
I was going to say, they normally do 1,100s, but some of their bigger events are 16. So it was a $1,600 event.
I think it was a million guaranteed.
Wow,
it
really?
Might have been 500K.
That's kind of ballsy considering.
All right, I'm putting you on your phone. I'm going to look it up.
Okay. Now we can all hear the difference between speakerphone and regular phone. Ooh, Jupiter and Saturn are about to do something not seen for nearly 800 years. I wonder what they do. Can Jupiter and Saturn like have a baby and it comes out as Neptune? I just turned on a thing and this popped up. So random Ken thought here in the middle of episode 34.
Dun, 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 dun. All right. Well, I know that the total prize pool was 1.7 million.
Oh my God. How many players is that?
It's 1,239 entries.
Jeez.
So either way, if it was a 500K guarantee, they smashed it by over 3X.
I think it was a $500,000 guarantee, to be honest.
I think it was a $500,000 because I know that they had their $1,100 buy-in is a 200K guaranteed.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with 500K because I remember, you know, Todd and Jordan telling me that they were smashing the guarantees really early. So
wow, just to
I
be honest,
500K.
It could be way less than that because the Venetian is coming up again in January, and
it was at the Venetian.
You know, I know they're going back to the Venetian in the first like New Year's Day, and that's a 250K guarantee. So I wonder how many people will show up for that.
So it could have even been a 250K guarantee. Anyways, doesn't matter what the guarantee was, even if it was a million, which I don't even think it was now. They smashed it. 1.77 million.
That's crazy.
In the prize pool.
I mean, that's like
1,239
entrants. WSOP summer kind of numbers.
Yeah, 327K to first.
Wow.
And you can buy in 2 hours into day two, which was kind of crazy.
How many day ones did they do? Does it show?
I think three.
Okay.
I think Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Maybe even only just two. Thursday, Friday, and then. What? No, because day two was Sunday, so I think it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday for day ones. Day two, Sunday. Day three, Monday. So I know that 60 people came back for day three. Yeah, so I had a horsey in there. I had
$400,000 guarantee. Is that right? November 19th through the 23rd.
Yep, that's it. 400K. So they 4x'd it plus.
Yeah, 4.5. Close. 1.7. 1.6 would be four times. All right, we don't need to do math in the podcast because you and I are both. I'm not very good at math on the fly. Episode 37, Math on the Fly, Poker Math, and How It Can Help You.
So the tournament, I know I had a horse. I sweated him deep on Poker News. He got 7. Disappointing. Mm-hmm. Seven for episode seven.
The one with Jordan Hellstern, the two-time WSOP ring champion, which if that's a great episode to listen if you start drinking by yourself at home, because you'll fit right in.
Yeah, that was him in the middle of the pandemic. Oh, he didn't know what to do with his life.
Boy, it was a good one. Jordan's a lot of fun. He makes me laugh. And he's a wild and crazy poker player and a super fun guy to hang out with. I think I would have fun with him in Vegas.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know if my 40-year-old body could do it, but
he's like 37. He's there. He had Ben Keeline, who won the Colossus for $1 million.
Yep, I saw a picture of the two of them together on something.
He was in his ring.
That's awesome.
He was in his corner. I shouldn't say ring because he didn't win, but 39,000 for seventh, lost a race, outflopped the guy too, and just lost a race.
Now what did he have? Do you remember the hand or?
Yeah, he reshoved eights. The guy had queen jack. Came 4, 5, 6. Turn queen.
Ugh.
But the big hand was with like 14 left. He got in ace queen versus sixes all in preflop. Small blind just shoved like 24 bigs into him with sixes, which of course the kid goes on to win the tournament. Queen high flop, turn six.
Oh.
So that was for like heaps of chips with 15 left. And that hand ended up crippling him to like 600,000, which was like 8 or 10 bigs. He found a double up, managed to get to the final table, which I will say they have a little, it was 8-handed tables, state law of Nevada, COVID 8-hand tables, also partitions and mass mandatory, and still only 8-handed.
Yeah. So, I'm not going to say that like there's an over precaution, but I feel like that's like the equivalency of wearing a belt and suspenders.
Yeah, like it's very, one very of them, much on the cautious side.
Yeah, one works. Like, why do I need to wear? I don't know. It just seems. Right. I guess it doesn't really matter. What's the difference? It just seems like a lot of money to kind of invest and do. And they're very weird to like see the tables. I feel like I would be a little claustrophobic if I had to be in that table. Like it's weird with like the partitions. It is. Like, and you're looking through the glass. I also feel like it would be a hindrance to playing. Like, you can't hear anybody talking about it's like muffled. You know how like, it was funny. Shout out to my mother-in-law, which is zero chances she's ever going to listen to a poker podcast, but maybe she does because she supports her son-in-law, which is awesome. So if you are listening, thank you. But I ran into her at Jewel, just down the street from the office here. I was going to get stuff for Thanksgiving dinner because I'm going to cook Thanksgiving at home because I'm really embracing this like stay at home thing. Cause I like, it's not fair for me to like have birthday parties and do Thanksgiving dinner and stuff because I'm like,
I
can't go to work. Exactly. Right. I can't go to work. And you know, unless these numbers come down, I don't want to be part of the, I want to be part of the solution. Even it doesn't matter if you believe any of the whatever, it doesn't matter. It's just I want to be part of the solution.
How much it sucks, right?
Correct. I want to be part of the solution. So like I'm cooking. But anyways, the whole point of that was that I saw her. We just randomly ran into each other. She doesn't even like really live by there. She was just driving from work to home and was like stopping at a random Jewel, which is the Jewel I shop at. And when we were talking, it was so aggravating for me because like neither one of us can really hear what the other one's saying because we're both wearing like super heavy duty like masks and like you don't want to take them off. And it's just, it was very weird. It was cut like, what? Huh? What was that? Oh, yeah. Billy is crazy. I was like, no, I said it's silly, Maisie. You know, it's like, it's, you know, it's such
plus
a pain.
Plus, you have partitions to like look through. And my it's point. Like, when you get like 3 or 4 of those, like, can you even really see the guy like 4 seats away from you?
It's like, I think it would be a huge, difficult thing to play in. Like that's
Jordan also got really drunk and was mucking over the partition.
Oh my god!
Which is like a foot high instead of the like spot where your hands go, where you just push it forward. He was mucking. He was like shooting the cards over. So there's always ways to get around it.
Again, Jordan is super fun. You should listen to his episode. He took the high road, literally. Oh boy! All right, so that's the whole point of that was that. 8-handed is the Nevada casino regulations are 8-handed tables. They are not allowed to play more than 8. Now, typically when you play an eight-handed game, when you go to a final table in a tournament, you always go up one. Even a six-handed, like six-max tournament, the final table has seven players in it. It's always one more, because what we don't want to do is play an eight-handed table throughout the entire tournament, and then you get down to nine players. What happens, Brandon? You got one table of five, one table of four.
You got five and four.
That's a huge difference. What you want is two tables of five. When you get down to nine, that disadvantage of being five and four, you just go to the final table at nine. So you just add
same
a player.
Same thing with six-handed. You don't want to be four and three.
Correct. Because it's such a disadvantage to play at the short end of the table. One, you have less chips to win. Two, if you're a short stack, also really bad. Three, if you're a big stack, it sucks because all the little stacks are not even really playing. They're just waiting to jam and hope. Like, it's not, you're not even playing poker. You're just like sitting there.
And the blinds come around quicker.
Yeah,
obviously.
Well, and that's a disadvantage. There should be some kind of, like, I don't know.
Dead button.
Something. Like, honestly, there should be. I don't know if that would really work, but I guess it would take one extra hand. We should figure out a way to implement this. Episode 40, how to play shorthanded tables and equalize the play of said. I got nothing for that.
You fixed that by just going nine-handed. But anyways, because of the gaming laws.
They're not allowed to do that.
They had to play five and four, and Jordan was short and at the table of four, which
is like,
I mean,
the nut.
It just polarized it for him. Like, he's either going to double up or he's going to be out. Like, that's right. Like, there's no in between. Now, luckily, somebody busted really quick and they got to a final. But, like, that's just, it's a really crappy pull of the draw.
It's unfortunate.
You know, it is, especially when you're playing with $325,000 the first in the middle of a pandemic, and you got to worry about state laws making it unfair for you, let alone you can't win a race. I mean, you know what I mean? So it's a little unfortunate, but he got through it and then got seventh.
It's so funny. I was totally making up the fact that the episode 10 Poker Culture 101 Stereotypes, Language, and Unwritten Rules of Poker was in the top five episodes. I was just like spitballing. It's actually number five.
Wow.
That's crazy. Anyways,
we just make it up on the fly, guys, and we're usually right.
It's close.
So that takes care of the three.
It's close.
States. States that.
That's a funny PLO game if you played the CCG PLO game, and then our dear friend John. I don't want to say his last name because I don't want him to like be outed, but like he was getting berated by this like really drunk bad player that just does that like miracle like. Beaten the Russian hockey team with like a JV Mighty Ducks kind of thing.
And let me tell you, this guy has never been to CCG before.
Never came back. It's the worst kind of winner when like a total luck box beginner comes in, drunk, just hits everything, every one outer he needs to get. And then the guy like tries to justify his play, and he's like, "John, what do you think?" And John's like, "It's close, it's close,
it's close."
And he was,
he's like, "Would you?" John had the nuts with a redraw
to the
and,
nuts,
like, backdoor flush draws,
right?
And the guy's like, "Would you call the jam?" John's like, "Nah, it's close." Like,
it was
clearly
so
it wasn't
funny.
Close.
It wasn't even close.
He did
not want to tap the tank. He wanted to keep that guy there as long as possible.
Embrace
because the
fish.
Longer you can keep the fish in the game, the better off you are. You can't eat the fish or kick them out of your pond. You gotta let them stick around so you can just keep take a little nibbles out of them.
Munch on them.
So you can just eat the whole thing. Anyways, I've derailed this conversation again.
It's okay. So that takes care of basically the live poker in the United States right now.
And Jordan ended up getting seventh place, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. He's episode seven and got seventh place. But he was disappointed with the seventh place.
Oh, yeah. I mean, $327K is like out of makeup. It's life changing money for somebody who's on. I mean, $327,000. I mean, I'm not even going to say
that. That's crazy.
Right.
I mean, that's
even
like
if you
buy a condo,
half of it away.
Buy a condo, like, and pay for it and be done, you know, and still have money left over.
It's like go ride off in the sunset. Like, he's been grinding nonstop for years to get that spot. And then, like, it's just so crazy. It's why tournament poker sucks. Like, all your equity just comes down to these crazy 60-40s and flips at the end for just
it's kind
of
one of those
thousands.
Things though, like, you only remember the bad beats, you never remember the things that got you there, like the
sure.
What I mean, like, I've always, it was funny,
I'm sure he won 12 races in the tournament,
correct, and then, of course, then
whatever.
It was like, I was thinking, I played a good round of golf the other day, shot even par, and I was like, oh man, I missed that one. I'm like, I could have easily shot 400 or 500 par. Like, no matter what you do at the end of a tournament, anything like that, you can always look back and go, man, I should have won that pot, which would have, but you never really know how the story plays out. Because if you'd have won that pot, you might have played differently or not been involved in another pot that you won.
Yeah,
so it's like one of those things.
Changes. Butterfly effect.
Yeah, Mr. Destiny.
So top four was 100K cash, and he got seventh. It's just
I would
it just
like
ramping up so much right
a
there.
A six-figure score like that would be that would just be super cool. Like, just to get into, you know, especially.
But then you get fourth and you're like, oh man, I'm two spots away from another 150,000.
That's the other problem. When you get into that type of, I don't want to call it stupid money, but when you get into like yearly salary money, where like fourth place is 100K and third place is what, like 180 or something?
Right, like 155 or 160. Right,
like it's $55,000 difference. Like that's a crazy number. That covers my entire tournament winnings of lifetime status.
Right, just be like, let's chop this up, guys.
Yeah. Does anybody ever chop those up when they get to
that? I don't know. I'm never there, so I don't know.
Yeah, me neither. I wish I could say I knew. Let us know if you've actually gotten into that situation. Hit us up on Twitter.
Right.
We have a new Twitter handle. It's easier. It's just at the overlay. At the overlay pod.
The overlay?
I think it's at the overlay pod. The overlay pod. Yeah.
So it's no just, underscore?
No, I don't know why I did the underscore the first time. That just seems kind of stupid.
I think it looks cool, but it's a lot harder to remember.
But, and it is. And it's like, wait, what's the underscore? Like, I had one guy like type out the overlay underscore pod. And I was like, bro, what? You don't qualify for Twitter. Go back. So, yeah, really at the overlay pod. Anyways, so that kind of hits up the only three locations right now regionally that are playing in the United States: Vegas, Texas, and Florida. We gave you our input on both Texas and Vegas because neither one of us have gone to Florida. And I haven't really played much poker in Florida either. I've only played golf in Florida.
Yeah, last time I played poker in Florida, I was 19. It was at the Hard Rock, and it was 100 max buy-in no matter what limit you were playing.
Yeah, I so remember
I
that.
I played 5-10, no limit hold'em. Maximum buy-in $100.
Yeah, it was weird. That was where you used to, like, you'd have to be, like, part of the regular crew.
Right, and be like, everybody all in and just, like,
that's what happens.
Make it so everybody wins once, and now everybody's got 500.
Yep, that's exactly what happens. You don't go all in. You go all in, like, minus a dollar so you can fold. You basically just punt off so that everybody can buy in for, like, 500 or 600, and then that's it.
Yep, and now we start. It's like, okay, well, it's been 10 hands, and we all got 600 now.
Right, so you play, like, one round of punting back and forth to get everybody up to, like, some recent or some decent stacks. And it's kind of fun. It's a weird thing to do. Anyways, what else we got to talk about? What's happening, poker? What's happening in the world of poker?
We got a couple online things going.
Yep.
I guess we'll start with Negreanu and Doug Polk.
Yeah, that's pretty big. At first I thought it was serious, and then I thought it was like a media like kick just to get both of them like in the news.
I think it started as a Twitter feud, right?
Right. And now I feel like it's back to feuding. I think it went from feud to like, hey, this is a great idea for both of our content creation. And then it was like, oh, no, wait, I really remember that you're a dick and I don't want to talk to you. And I really want to just steal your money. I say steal. I really want to beat you for your money. So like now they're back to the feuding side of it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So there was a really long session last night. Last night being Monday the 23rd. Mm-hmm. And Doug Polk won. He's got 120,000, basically 120,000 up. This is real money, their own money. So that's 12 buy-ins if they're buying in 10K at a time.
Wow. So what are they playing? Do you know what they're actually like?
I think it's.
Are they playing different games?
No, I think it's all the same. 25. I think it's 25-50.
Limit.
25-50. No limit.
Oh, no limit. Okay.
No limit. Heads up. Don't quote me on that, but it's something like that.
Whatever.
It's high stakes, heads up.
Yeah.
And I know that Negreanu's a big dog. Big dog coming in. They were putting the line at like Doug Polk minus 400. Like you got to put up $400 to win 100 on Doug Polk.
Really?
Because he's supposed to be, you know, the heads up specialist. I mean, heads up is Doug Polk's. That's what he made his living off of. That's his game, shorthanded heads up stuff. Wow. And Negreanu's more of, you know, a tournament guy and
the most accomplished tournament player.
Of course, but, you know,
winnings we all wise, know. Has anybody won any more money than him?
Yeah, I think Esfandiaria is the most because he won that million, one drop. Million for 20 million or 18 million or whatever.
But take that away. It's still Daniel. Right. Anyways, go ahead.
Yep. So, I mean, that's pretty much all I got. I don't know how many exact hands they're playing. I know that they're about a fourth of the way done. I want to say they're playing something like 20,000 hands. They're playing a good amount of hands where variance isn't really going to be able to. They take variance out of it with the amount of hands. And I know they started with like they played a live match at the Aria
A
couple weeks ago to start it off. And Doug Polk punted and lost it all in like literally the last hand. They played like 100 hands or something stupid. And like on hand 99, he bluffed it all off. And then Negreanu took the early lead. And then Doug Polk came back, took a big lead, and then Doug Polk's big lead, which like 12, 13 buy-ins, got diminished again, and then Grindu came back and took the lead, and then last night, Doug Polk had a massive session, and he's now retaking the lead by like 12 buy-ins. So it's going back and forth. It's pretty entertaining.
I was gonna say up and down.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining, and I mean, I'm not following it too much, but obviously I'm going to root for Doug Polk because I don't like Canadians. I'm just kidding. I like Canadians, but I don't really like Daniel Grindu. He's meh in my book. So
yeah,
and I don't know. I think you don't like either of them, right? I mean, you don't care for either of them.
I don't care for either of them. I like watching Daniel Grindu use the WSOP vlogs because I think they're interesting to kind of see some of his thought process.
I can agree with that. Just because you can see the behind the scenes stuff, well, which
and
is
not
like,
only
oh,
that,
man,
it's less. It's less about like let me do this hand breakdown because like I'm not that interested in hearing because it's basically just a bad beat story on YouTube. Like I don't want or a good beat story, whatever. I just that doesn't interest me. It's the idea of like him talking about like. You know, different things and like his thought process on like why he's buying in early or why he's buying in late or why he did this or why he did like it, that part's really cool. And again, to see him like go out into his trailer and like hang out and he like sleeps. It's just, I
plus,
find it
like
very
preparation. And it's like really cool. Cause like when you get to see like, oh man, well like I'm going to wake up at this time and do this and then go to the gym and then play this tournament. And I brought this for dinner. I'm going to go to the trailer on this break. And then like, it's really cool to see somebody have that all like mapped out and like, realize that they aren't playing the same game as Joe Schmo who buys in and it's like, yeah, I'm gonna eat a cheeseburger and hopefully I run deep in this thing.
Right. Yeah. It's such a like taking very random occurrences and being like, this is the exact reason why I'm doing it and what I'm going to do. I find to be, it's interesting to watch him. And I think that part, he does a really good job. It's actually made him, it made me like him a lot more than I ever have in the past. I was never a big Daniel Grindu fan and I become a better, you know, I hate him.
It's one of those things too. I don't, you know, I think his Twitter kind of turns me off to him and, you know, maybe not so much his views in the, on the world, but it is a true testament that he does like everything that he does dispute about is like for the good of the game, which I can respect that. Like he like tries to be the ideal ambassador.
Shameless
of the game.
Plug number two.
Okay.
He was very big on the re-entry debate, which I think is like episode three. It is episode three, the re-entry debate. Remember, because he was like, that. It's not fair. And he's a guy that benefits from re-entry of tournaments, right? Like he benefits because he's the guy who's a pro.
He has
all the money.
He
doesn't need
money.
To. Right. Like it's such a different for him to be like, no, we shouldn't allow this. It should go back to where everything is, you know, one and done kind of thing. But yeah, that's neat. Anyways, Doug Polk, I'm also not a big fan of. I think he's kind of douchey.
I like it. I watched him
blast us on Twitter because that would just
that'd
only
be great.
Good. Yeah.
All content's good content. All press is good press.
Yep.
Yeah, I told side story really quick. My buddy Joe Martinez, he's been putting
Brandon, this entire podcast is a side story. Go ahead.
It's great. Not really. I mean, we've been on there a little bit. Mm-hmm. This is really quick. This is 20 seconds. I'm like, you're 4 minute rants. Joe, he's been putting his picks on Twitter, like his sports picks. No. He started off 1-7 and like a bunch of like just loser, a couple bad beats, whatever. So me and my other buddy, we're just like trolling him on.
We're
trolling him on Twitter and he's got like 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 comments now on these 1 picks. And then I hit him up the other day and I was like, you want to do this? He's like, I don't know. You're going to leave another shitty comment on Twitter. And I was like, hey man, all press is good press, dude. I was like, all press
doesn't
is good
matter.
Press.
It always
you want those 8 people on, under you talking.
Yeah. I don't care what they're saying. Cause like, I even love it because we're back to doing the No Days of Poker vlog. So today is the vlog number 2, even though it's like day 8 or 9, I gave up for a week. I gave myself a week break. And yes. To kind of get into it, it's funny. I had a hard time getting going. Like I was so used to doing it for like 100 days in a row that I was like just spouting them off. And I had a huge like writer's block last night trying to figure out not that I write anything down. I just had no idea what I was doing, but it was always funny when people would put on there, like, you know, they give you like the thumbs down button and be like, you suck and your hair's stupid. And I was like, ha ha. Thanks for the bump because every comment, negative or positive, is good for me. So
you're the one that
watched 4 minutes of me talking in my living room about 80s movies.
Oh, it's so true. So anyways, I like Doug Polk. Yeah. I watched his Twitch. I love that he played high stakes PLO on Twitch, showed his whole cards. And when he went to the cryptocurrency stuff, he sold out a little bit.
He did.
In the YouTube. But it's whatever. I mean,
does he still do that channel at all or no?
No, I don't think so. Bitcoin's 19,200.
Is it really again? I don't look at it anymore.
It is so close to being at its record high. Oof. So anyways, lastly, in this tour day poker of the United States, we have the WSOP announced they are now going to have another main event.
Yeah.
In December. They had the 5K re-entry main event. They claimed the guy the main event champion. This was a couple months back in, August?
And there's maybe a lot of arguing about that, if he was actually the main event champion, if they could be counted as a main event champion. Does his picture get to go up next year if we actually have a main event?
Right. So now they announce there's going to be a 10K buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's non-re-entries, which is massive because the other one was re-entries, and that was a big authenticity part of the main event. Is how could you have a main event and crown a main event champion if you're having re-entries? So I think it's going to be a 10K, no re-entry, one. It's a freeze out. They're going to have a United States main event, which is the domestic main event, which is like December 18th. And then that's on WSOP.com. So you have to be in Nevada or Pennsylvania or maybe one other state to play in it, but maybe just those two. And then there's an international main event, which is on GG Poker, which GG Poker is I remember when GG Poker sucked so much and it was the worst software ever. And these Twitch streamers with 100 viewers are like, this is going to be the next poker site. And I'm like, dude, PokerStars has got this. Well, now GG is taking over the world. They have Negreanu as their sponsor and they're taking over the world. They're going to have there's three starting flights for the international, only one starting flight for the United States. But they're also going to have an international main event. And that is going to take place in the next couple weeks here. It's before the United States one. So the cool thing about that and the thing that's also sparked controversy is the Rio will be hosting the domestic final table live.
Wow.
On December 28th. So if you make the final table of the WSOP main event online, you get to go live. And then same thing with international. It's going to be at...
But tell us, and then we'll wrap up this episode. Tell us about the crazy restrictions that they're putting on those live tables.
Oh, yeah. So if you make the final table, you have to
the idea here is it's like an international, domestic, legitimate main event.
So they're splitting it in half.
Correct.
Basically.
They're making it a more legitimate winner. It's the same dollar amount. It's the freeze out idea, right?
The final table's live, so it's more authentic
in Vegas,
than the 5K was.
Right.
So, but if you pass your COVID test, you forfeit the tournament.
If you fail your COVID test.
When you get there on December 28th. Not blind out, not we're going to postpone it 2 weeks. You out.
What do they do? So do they just...
I think they just go to Vegas and isolate straight up bubble style like the NBA did. That's what I would do. I mean... I'm not going to risk millions of dollars. I'm going to stay in.
No way. I'd be like Howard using it up.
I mean, I'd be taking tests basically every day. That's kind of crazy. So, and then the last thing, the international winner and the Vegas winner will play heads up for the crown, for who gets crowned main event champion.
Oh, no shit.
Yep. So the European or the international winner will fly to Vegas. It's December 30th, 2 days after the USA one is over. The international guy flies in and he plays the USA guy heads up, and there's one winner for the crown. So that's that.
The
international one is at King's Casino in Rendezvous.
Reykjavik.
How do you say it? Rendovic, yeah, whatever that is.
Oh, that's so, no, that's Rasvidav.
Rasvidav, yeah.
Yeah. Either way.
So that's pretty cool.
What's happening, poker.
So we're all going to have a main event. We got, and I think the whole premise of this whole episode, which I guess we can wrap it up in one 20-second little conclusion here, is that we need poker to keep running in these places that it's running in to have an easier recovery when this thing's all over. In March, April, May, June, next year, whenever that is. And I think that the poker industry as a whole needs these places to be successful to see a quicker rebound when we come out of it. Because who knows what would happen if Texas shuts down and Florida shuts down and Vegas shuts down again. We have no poker like we have in March. Well, now we have nothing to look at. We have nothing to work off of. We have no case studies. It's just all a crapshoot again, like it was at the beginning
everything
of this
gets,
whole thing.
Everything gets moved back in the sense
it kind of gets reset.
Right, like if people stop playing, then it's like the game kind of disappears, and then it takes longer to get back to where you were. I mean, think of it like the idea of when online poker went down, and you know that was the epicenter of poker. I mean, that's when the most amount of players were playing. It was all over TV. Everybody was playing. It was like a common thing. You know, I don't know if it was worldwide.
ESPN,
it was on everywhere. Like literally my grandparents, my 80 something year old grandparents, like literally were watching friggin' Poker After Dark and loved every second of it. They would call me the next day and be like, did you see what Esten Doyle Brunson? I mean, it was great. And then online poker died and Black Friday happened or Black Tuesday or whatever the hell day it was. And then I feel like poker gets regressed, right? Like it just kind of goes back away. All of the games get smaller. Everything goes down. Well, we're at that same point now that if the pandemic already has killed the games in where a lot of those like the regs, you know, not the regs, like the social people that play that are not playing for a living, that are just going to have a good time. The rec players. Yeah, I said it correct. You know, not regs, rec. Those players disappear. And if Texas gets shut down and, you know, Vegas gets shut down and Florida stops playing and there's just no poker to be had anywhere, the live poker games are going to take a very long time to recover. It's almost like too big to fail, right?
Right. And so, you need those places to stay relevant. Like you need MSBT to be posting a 1.7 million guarantee. They took the risk. That's why they probably double took precautions and ate hand tables and
Masks people weren't sick. Yeah. Which
right, and all that kind of stuff, because they realize how important it is to post those numbers so Poker News can report that, so it can stay out there that poker is running and relevant in the world, and you know, at least retain some of those fun players and those wrecks and those fishes and the people that drive the game.
Correct.
Like, at least there's something to look at. Like, at least there's something to look forward to, right, and like dream about. Like, you take all those dreams and stuff away, that what
people
what
will do
left.
Something else. They'll find a new hobby. We don't want them to do. We want you to play poker.
Very important.
So anyways, thank you for listening to episode 34 of the Overlay, a Poker Podcast. Hey, Poker, what's happening? That's the name of this episode. Brandon, as always, would like to thank everybody for the No Days at Poker vlog, which he promises to watch each and every one. The original reason I started doing the daily vlogs is that Brandon bet me I couldn't do it for more than, I think, 12 days in a row, and I did it for 100 days. Yep. So I think this time we should flip. I'm going to put little Easter eggs into the vlogs and make sure Brandon listens to them or watches them and see how many he can get to each and every day, because I guarantee you cannot listen to each and every one.
I probably can't. I mean, I'll try. We can. I'll
keep throwing those Easter eggs in. I did talk about you in the first one, so you can watch that one. Anyways, as always, please rate, review, and subscribe our podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to my co-host, Brandon. I feel like it's the Thanksgiving episode. So that was going to be my line. Yeah, we got to say thank you. So thank you for listening. Thank you for all of the great comments we get. And, you know, just keep being you. Keep playing poker, however it is. Stay safe out there in crazy COVID land. And Brandon, lead us out as always.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Farewell.
See you, everybody. Bye.